It's time for Matt Geek Gab, and my wife sent in the quick tip of the week when yesterday she emailed me and says, hey, I was reviewing our homeowner's insurance with our homeowner's insurance agent, and when I mentioned to them that we have a Ring camera in the driveway and also a sensor near our water heater to test for water leaks, it saved us $71 on our homeowner's insurance. So tell them about your smart home devices. More quick tips like this, plus your questions answered today on Mac Geek Gab 1084 for Monday, April 7th, Metric System Day, 2025. Welcome to Mac Geek Gab, the show where you send in quick tips like that, sometimes unintentionally. I love the unintentional quick tips. You send in cool stuff found. You send in questions that hopefully we answer. The goal being that each of us gets to learn at least five new things every single time we get together. ScreencastsOnline.com/MGG is our sponsor. It's also where you will go to get a 7-day free trial of their ever-expanding library of over 1,400 tutorials for our Mac and other Apple devices and stuff. We'll talk more about that in a little bit. Back here, after being at Podcast Movement in, I don't even remember where I was, Chicago. Back here in Durham, New Hampshire, I'm Dave Hamilton.
And here in South Dakota, I'm Adam Christensen. Sorry. Slow on the uptake this morning.
And Adam's back. All right. Here also in New Hampshire, it's Pilot Pete. I'm usually the one confused about what darn town I'm in. Man.
I was worried it was your connection, Adam, when there was that lag. Right? I'm like, oh, no.
He's frozen again.
Dead air. Hey, it's police code 1084. Advise of your ETA. I don't know if you have to give that in metric today.
Yes, not. I think so.
Okay. Now that it's metric day, does that mean that April has 10 weeks with 10 days in each week?
No, but we're going to go back to the Swatch internet time. I think that's as close to metric time as we've gotten. So,
oh, man.
Right? Wasn't that a thing? Isn't that what it was called?
Yes, there was Swatch time, and I forget what it was, the marketing term for it. But the idea was everybody was the same. So it was just a running, basically 24-hour clock. So
yeah,
three for me was three for you, or whatever the number was. I forget how they did the numbering. Yeah, I think it was in hundreds. So like
it was
300 was 300 for me and 300 for you. And
yeah, it was 1,000 beats per day.
No time zone.
A beat was a dot beat. I'm sorry. Let's make sure we're right on that. It was equivalent to 1 minute, 26.4 seconds. Yeah. Okay. So there's no time zones. But what's interesting is I can go to swatch.com/internet time or whatever. We'll put a link in the show notes. Yeah. It doesn't tell me what the current internet time is. Like, I know it's been sort of abandoned as a thing, but it could be cute that they could just do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Someone might want to know, actually.
I would want to know. Like, that's what an, yeah. Anyway. Yeah.
It was a failed idea.
Oh, big time. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Nobody was buying it. Well, I told you guys, I think I said it on this show, but maybe I didn't, that there's some group of people or people who have come up with this idea of a new calendar where every month has exactly the same number of days.
Hmm. All right. I can see that, you know, I get the sales pitch. Sure. This month, our giveaway, welcome to April, it's Clean My Mac. So if you just go to MacGeekGab.com/giveaway, you can sign up. We teamed up with the folks at MacPaw. They're giving away 5 annual memberships of Clean My Mac. So yeah, go check it out. Go check it out. I guess we got to move on to more quick tips. Is that the idea behind what we're doing?
I would think so. Yeah. Do we have a few?
I think so. Dan has our next one. He says, I was on a flight back from a spring break trip to Santa Fe recently. flying domestic, and that's important here, or at least a good distinction. He says, and my little Anker 65-watt USB-C adapter would not stay in the power socket on the plane between the seats. It kept falling out. It occurred to me that since the M-Power sockets on planes are all multi-country, I could use an international plug adapter, which I hadn't brought on this domestic flight, to fit securely into the socket. So I'm going to pick up an adapter, and we will link to the one that he chose to take with me in the future. I think that's a brilliant idea, especially for some of those that lock in better than US plugs, or even if they lock in the same as US plugs, certainly on planes that are flying domestic more than anything else they do, the US plugs might be a little worn out, whereas the international ones are probably, you know, nice and stiff and ready to go.
You probably shouldn't resort to bending the tines on your power adapter.
You probably shouldn't, but show of hands, how many of us have done that? I know.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I know 100% of us producing and listening to the show are raising our hands.
Yes.
Just keep your hands on the steering wheel there, folks.
Push them out.
But push them out.
So this was the actual just power cord.
Power cord from
the wall cord.
Yeah, the wall cord from his thing. Yeah.
Not the USB-C.
So, no, right. Yeah, exactly.
And I'm going to wonder aloud that, airlines like Southwest probably don't put the international ones on there since they really only fly to, but I don't know. You were on Southwest this week. Do you recall, Dave?
I don't recall on Southwest seeing AC outlets. They have USB-C and USB-A in the somewhere. And it's like 30 watts of USB-C or
so
something.
So those outlets are not standard to the airplane. They are standard to the airline that orders the interiors.
I know that JetBlue's planes had have the multi-country things, and they all those planes are mostly domestic as well. So,
although they do fly to Europe.
That is fair.
So what I wanted to ask. Sorry, go ahead, Pete.
I was just going to say the only other thing is I don't know if it's more common on Airbus than on Boeing. So
maybe yeah. What were you going to say, Adam?
So the kind of follow-on question I have on this, and the reason I was asking if it was the physical wall plug versus the USB-C, is do you guys find that USB-C plugs, for me, they seem to be looser and, like, I kind of miss lightning to a certain degree because they would always lock in, and I feel like USB-C is wobbly and wiggly sometimes and finicky.
Yeah. It's not the best standard, is it?
It doesn't have the same. There's like a little nub at the end of a lightning connector that really locks it in.
It's satisfying click.
Yes. Yeah. USB-C does not have that. In fact, well, that wasn't my issue the other morning. I was having trouble sleeping the other night in the hotel, which was weird because the first night I slept like 8 hours, which was awesome. But there were outlets on the wall next to the bed, and then there were outlets in the alarm clock. And I noticed that my wall wart fell out of the outlet on the wall. And I'm like, all right, well, I'm just going to put it on the alarm clock because it's a top down thing. Like, it would probably not fall out.
Harder to fall out.
Yeah. The whole gravity thing. And then at 6 a.m., after I probably fell asleep at like 5:15 a.m., at 6 a.m., the alarm clock went off because evidently I pushed the button that turned the alarm on at the same time that I pushed the plug into the thing. It was just that particular night of sleep was a comedy of errors. So, it was just like, of course that's happening right now. That's perfect. Yeah, it's great. Anyway, thank you for that, Dan. Good advice. Yep. You got Ben next, Pete?
Yeah. I do. Ben has a nice quick tip about using notes. He writes, in Apple Notes on Mac, you can press Command and Return to change the keyboard focus between the list of notes and the editor of the currently selected note. This way, you can use the arrow keys to select a note and then press Command Return to place the cursor at the bottom of the note editor. to keep editing. So pressing the shortcut again will move the focus back to the list. Further, you can use Command Option F to move the focus to the search field, and then there are 1 to 3 tab stops from there to the list, depending on whether the sidebar is visible and or keyboard navigation is enabled in System Settings Keyboard. That is, from search, press tab to move to the sidebar if you have that visible, and then press tab again to move to the new folder button if keyboard navigation is enabled, and then press tab again to move back to the notes list. From there, tab will usually place the cursor in the top of the note editor. Now, I know when you're driving along and listening to all that, it's hard to follow. Get in notes, play with command return and the arrow keys, and you will find this will start making sense. It's one of those things you kind of have to see, but play with command return and the arrow keys. I like it.
Arrow keys or the tab key?
The tab key, but I think the arrow keys work also for, let me look.
I don't think the arrow.
Yeah. So if you're in the list, you can now use the arrow keys to go down to the next note.
Oh yeah. Fair.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah. So it's something that's not obvious, as we talk about it. It's like, there's a lot going on there. But once you do it, your hands are going to really like it, and a lot less mouse clicking and gooey.
You know, it's interesting that you added that little context, Pete, because when I saw this, I knew that it was going to be valuable, but my brain could not process it. But I put it in the list for the show anyway. Yeah. And then literally as you were reading it, I was in notes testing it. It was like, oh, this is amazing.
It works great. Yeah.
Yeah. So what I will do is I will put the two sort of primary keystrokes here, Command Return and Command Option F. I will write those out and put them in the show notes so that when you're reading the show notes, you know which ones to play with. And it will make a difference for you. Yeah, for sure. Thank you for this, Ben. Yep. And if you want those show notes in your email box, how do you do that? You go to MacGeekGab.com.
Oh, I know.
Go, what's that, Pete? Go, Pete.
Feedback@MacGeekGab.com.
Actually, no. We can't sign you up for the mailing list that way. But you could email feedback@MacGeekGab.com if you wanted. Just visit MacGeekGab.com and sign yourself up for the mailing list.
I hit the buzzer too soon. I had the wrong answer to the right question. Or the right answer to the wrong question. I don't know.
So, Pete, just to clarify, you do not email feedback@MacGeekGab.com for signing up for the newsletter, but you can send your questions there and we will do our best to try and answer them. Also your quick tips and cool stuff found and everything else. Yeah.
All right. Here's another one that is about voice, and maybe is easier to digest in an audible form. Andrew writes, as a tip, create gestures that you can trigger with your voice. The iOS accessibility features can replay any series of touch actions when you give a voice command. Imagine mapping out an entire tedious action that you do frequently in an app, such as manually entering information to move through screens or having a command that scrawls your signature or draws a picture. Go to Settings, tap Accessibility, and then tap Voice Control, toggle it on, and then tap Commands, Create New Command. Enter your desired command phrase, tap Action, and then tap Run Custom Gesture. Use your finger to create the gesture on your home screen, and your phone will replay it when you say the trigger phrase. He says, as a note, we found that voice control would respond to anyone using the command. It is not voice specific like some of the other S-Lady commands are. So maybe turn this one off when you aren't using it. That's interesting.
Yeah, I played with that.
Okay.
It's harder than it seems on its face, at least when I read it, because when you say, hey, I want to do this touch thing, it gives you a white screen.
Whoa, you have to do it from memory.
You have to know. Yeah, you have to know. For instance, I said, I created one that says, shoot a video.
Okay.
And let's see if that did it. Okay, good. It was face down, so it didn't do it, but because I still have it turned on.
Oh yeah.
But if I say shoot a video, it now hits the camera and then swipes it to video mode. So I'm ready to go.
Got it.
And but I had to know where the camera icon is on my home screen, and then once that opens, where to swipe to get to video. And but it works. But you have to know where it is. I don't know a workaround for that as yet. If someone knows that, they could probably send it to feedback@macgeekcap.com. I had to do that.
That was the right one. Feedback@macgeekcap.com. Exactly.
That's correct. Feedback@macgeekcap.com.
All right. Let's go to Ian's quick tip. Ian first starts with a thank you. He says, I want to thank you for recommending packing an Apple TV on vacations. We just got back from spring break with extended family in a shared house. I just have to say, not having to log into a single streaming service is way, way more luxurious than it sounds. The in-laws thought I was a wizard. It's because you are, Ian. He says, however, I have an added bonus tip. AirPods. I was able to sneak out to the living room after everyone went to sleep and watch TV in silence because it was my Apple TV to which my AirPods were automatically paired. You guys rock. You rock, Ian. Thank you. I love the context of these things and how these tips kind of, you know, the ripple effects. It's great.
Yeah,
I freaking love it.
I actually do that at home sometimes in the morning because now our living room is right next to our bedroom. I'll turn on the TV and watch with the AirPods if Debbie's still sleeping. So
I got to remember that I can do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I always forget that the AirPods are just auto paired to the TV in that sense. Yeah.
Yeah. And now that my Sonos speakers are downstairs, the sound is so much better than the TV in my AirPods. So sorry.
Right. No.
I was just saying, I do this all the time. And also partially for that reason, you know, I think we've talked to both. I've got tinnitus and my hearing's not as great as it used to be. And it's also just easier to listen that way a lot of times.
Yeah.
I have a question. You can do up to two sets of AirPods or more on an Apple TV.
I believe it is two, a max of two. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. 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 All right. Shall we keep plowing through here? Okay.
Yeah. I have one from Mike. He says, for Adam and anyone buying an M series MacBook, and I'm not there yet, but maybe. Mike says, I just traded my M1 MacBook Pro for an M4 MacBook Air, and I waited for the MacBook Air with 32 gigabytes of memory because running Xcode and other apps gave me low memory warnings regularly. My work MacBook Pro M2 with 32 gigs never did. I travel enough that using a laptop on an airplane is much easier with the smaller monitor size. So I acquired a 13-inch MacBook Air M4 with 32 gigabytes of unified memory and a 1 terabyte drive. I couldn't be happier. No more memory warnings, and just so useful even when running daisy chained to two Thunderbolt 27-inch monitors. So the tip there is get plenty of memory with your new machine. And I think that's, for me, that's a long-standing tip, right? Always get as much memory as you can afford. It comes up a lot. You know, I think you're never going to be happy. You're never going to be in a place where you're like, oh, I have too much memory. I don't think that can be a thing.
That's like a pilot with too much fuel.
Well, you could have too much fuel, though, because of the weight of it, right, Pete?
Well, there's only time you have too much fuel is when you're on fire.
Yes.
And when you're trying to get off a short runway, yes.
Oh, that makes sense. Okay.
Too much weight, yeah.
Otherwise, the weight's really not making a huge difference.
Well, that's what I mean. It's the weight. Well, it depends on the airplane, right? I mean, even my little airplane, I got 300 pounds of fuel.
Yeah.
If I fill that up, it's really hard to fill all four seats.
And still be under your weight limit.
Yeah, and still be under the gross weight limit of the airplane.
Got it.
But that's always the joke in, you know, especially in tactical airplanes, as soon as you start the engine, you're low on fuel. And so you can never have too much fuel unless you're on fire.
Right. That makes sense. Yeah. Yeah. And unfortunately, your amount of fuel will decline rapidly if you're on fire and not in a good way. Yes.
And the amount of you will also decline rapidly.
Yeah, that is the unfortunate side effect of that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, here's to hoping that never happens to anybody here listening.
Amen.
Or part of it. Yep, for sure. All right. Well, on that subject, listener John had a question, so we'll change gears a little bit so that we can stay on topic. John says, greetings from the UK. I am considering investing in an M4 Air. I currently have an Intel iMac 24-inch from 2017, but I have a couple of questions. What use cases might justify bumping the memory up to 24 gigs or even more? I'm pretty sure for my current activity, 16 would be fine, but with the pace of AI, who knows? I have a number of legacy USB-A devices, scanners, hard drives, microphone, and I'm not sure whether to invest in a dock or a hub. Candidly, I'm not sure of the relative merits of either or what they are. And then number three, I know the quality won't be as good, but would it be possible to hook the MacBook Air up to the iMac purely to use as a larger screen occasionally? Appreciate a steer. Adam, you want to take any one of those questions to start here?
Sure. I mean, we why don't I do the memory thing since I was just talking about memory. So again, the thing with the memory is general advice. If you can afford more, buy more. I think you're going to be fine in the short term with the 16 probably, but it's really about longevity and hearing that you currently are on a 2017 Intel machine and this is now when you're upgrading. Seems like you're the type of person who appreciates longevity. So like, yeah, even if you can't think of anything you need the memory for now, 5 years from now, it might become very important to you to have some extra memory because that's how computers go, right? We always need more. We very rarely need less as time goes on.
And unlike fuel in a plane, the extra memory does not add weight to your MacBook Pro.
Correct. Does add cost.
It lightens your wallet. So it does have that effect on weight.
That's right. It has a weight effect that way. So, of course, putting fuel in your airplane lightens your wallet too, I can attest.
Yeah, for sure. I would agree. I would get as much RAM as you can, even though unified memory has proven to be fairly efficient, especially as compared to the ununified memory that we had prior to the M series. However, you are sharing that unified memory with the GPU and all the other things. So as you add screens and all of that, it will impact it. I'd be curious on the Andrew quick tip. Mike quick tip about getting more memory with your MacBook. How many monitors he is hooking that up to?
He
said two, right? So I'm
two
wondering
27
if,
inch.
If that's the part of the memory issue is, you know, as you add monitors, you're eating into your RAM. I don't know.
He's also using Xcode, as Fair. Mentioned there too. So
yep.
Probably developer compiling. That's when he was seeing out of memory errors.
That's
so
fair.
I mean, your use cases are obviously going to come to play, but even if your use cases today are not heavy, like you said, there's more AI stuff coming, which is that puts a lot on your GPU. So if you're sharing that memory, you know, there's a reason why Apple Intelligence is not able to go back on older machines. And there's a reason why Apple up to the base memory, most people feel, I mean, Apple didn't say officially, but most people feel it's because of Apple Intelligence. And I would concur with that.
I am also on that page. Yes. In terms of his question about hubs or docks, the term, there might be some official distinction there, but I'm not aware of it. The way I differentiate between a dock and a hub is that I consider docks to be those self-powered devices with lots of ports, perhaps, you know, even offering like the you know, Thunderbolt splitting and all of that. And a hub, I think of, or a dongle, you know, is generally powered by the computer or the computer's power supply. If it supports pass-through, generally has a smaller number of ports in a more bespoke way, and it's a little more purpose-built. So that, you know, I would look at what you're doing, what you need to connect it to, and where you will be when you need to make those connections, because it might be wise to buy two things. One for your desk at the office, you know, where it will be used primarily at home, office, whatever. And then one for travel. And that way you only have what you need with you at any given point in time, but you always have what you need with you is kind of the benefit of doing it that way. So that's yeah. how I would approach the add-on, you know, the dongle world, as I like to say.
Yeah. I was getting hung up a little bit on that word, hub. Is that what we used?
Yeah.
What
did he say? He said dock versus what's hub. A dock and I was hub? Like, yeah. yeah, I don't really know.
Well, it's become kind of, what's the word I'm looking, nebulous. There's a nebulous distinction between those anymore. That
sort of.
Yeah.
Because there are Thunderbolt hubs, which are a very specific thing.
That's yes. correct.
So, fair enough, yeah. And those are hubs in the true sense of the word, where you're taking your signal and you're splitting it up and you're getting full, you know, full bandwidth through that thing. That's, you know, OWC has a Thunderbolt hub.
Yes.
And that's very different than a dock. And it's very different than what we traditionally think of as like the USB-C dongle, that I have USB-C coming out of my Mac. And then I have, you know, six USB-A ports on that thing. That little, well, I don't,
right.
I don't, I guess there's, you could call that a hub, but it's not really a hub. It's just like a,
the terminology that I use kind of in my brain, which therefore must come out when I'm talking here on this show, but I can't recall, is I think of things as docks or dongles, right? And the dock is the thing that stays in place, generally is self-powered, and I plug my computer into it. A dongle is the thing that comes with me, and I plug it into my computer. I realize that, you know, I'm adding a very... They are both being plugged into each other in all cases. However,
you mean exactly what you know, though.
Yeah, but I mean what I know, which is the yeah. dock stays in place, the dongle comes with. And yep. in either case, generally, though, only a dock will have a hub in it. Or like you said, Adam, you can get a separate Thunderbolt 4 and later hub that will be a splitter. And that's why when I was giving my answer, I used the term Thunderbolt splitting, not Thunderbolt hubbing. But really, the correct term is Thunderbolt hubbing. I used an incorrect term so as not to confuse things. But you're right that the term that is part of the spec is Thunderbolt hubbing, and that was the thing we got with Thunderbolt 4. So
yeah. So the distinction, you know, really to be made there is because it became confusing when we had Thunderbolt hubs, because we had Thunderbolt docks, and a lot of people might conflate those and think they're the same thing, but they're not. They
right.
have different purposes.
Yes.
Explicitly.
Yes. Exactly.
The only other thing I wanted to add to this is, well, two things. I have two things to add. So you mentioned, you know, dongles and going on the road, because he's moving from a desktop system to a laptop, and he mentioned some of the accessories, like, for example, a USB-A mic that plugs in with USB-A.
Yeah.
That might be able to be solved with just a cable swap or just a simple dongle. Like, you might not need a whole series of ports. You might be able to just get a simple USB-A to C adapter and just plug yep. in yeah,
those,
that way.
Or a like cable. $2 on Amazon.
Exactly. And then the other thing is I do use, quote unquote, a USB dongle because I have four or five USB-A external hard drives. And so I just have one of those ones. What I recommend there is you can get the little self-powered ones that get power off the USB-C. But if you're going to have a lot of ports in there, they do have ones that have their own power supply. And I find those work better. They're more stable when you're plugging in like a lot of things into a single dongle, as we might call it.
That's a great point. Yeah. If you want that thing to also then power SSDs and the like, you want it to have its own bespoke power, not be reliant on getting it up from upstream from your computer.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah. Great point. That will also reduce heat on your computer, as I'm finding with a lot of experiments, there's a whole thread.
Oh, yeah.
There's a whole thread in our Discord about what was happening to me when I was recording that show from Austin that we did on my laptop, where I had a process that was running out of control. I've done a lot of testing since I've been back, and at first I thought I was running into a heat issue. I'm not certain that was the case anymore. However, I have learned how to mitigate heat. And of course, as you start thinking about these things, one of the obvious ones is, well, don't provide so much power to things downstream and it won't generate as much heat, but I don't think my problem was heat related. But there's more about that in the Discord thread and more to add. I'll put a link to that so that I'm not intentionally being vague. I just want to stay on topic here.
So I've actually got a kind of a quick question then that may take us into his third question, because I don't do this. I was thinking, which, he wants to use his iMac as a display.
Yeah.
I would have thought screen sharing, but I used to, but back in my Windows days, I had a dock and I would put my big Dell laptop on there and it would go to the screen. I had a separate keyboard and all that. That I think in Mac they called it clamshell mode. I don't even know if they do that anymore. Again, I'm purely on my laptop. So what is the best way to hit that second larger display?
He said it's a 2017 24-inch iMac. I'm pretty sure by that point in time you did not have the ability to use it in target display mode. But that's what that was called.
Yeah, that's right.
Some Macs could do it. The 27-inch ones, the 5K ones never could. I don't think that particular 24-inch iMac was old enough to do that, but it might have been. If it's not, check if you can use target display mode. We'll put links in the show notes about that. If you can't, there is something called Luna Display from our friends at AstroPad that is built to turn either your iPad or a second Mac into an external display, essentially. And it's got their own proprietary thing. I think it's about $100. Yep. And you run an app on one device and the little dongle on the other, and you're off to the races.
Not a dock, a dongle.
Yeah, it's a little dongle. It's a little USB thing, but it's the Luna display. And then that'll get you there. It's $90 and you can make the magic happen. It plugs into, you plug the dongle into the Mac that is the
computer.
That's the computer, right. And then you run software on the second device and that makes the magic happen, I believe. But anyway, you can go check it out at AstroPad.
I wonder if you can plug that dongle into a dongle. If it will still work, it should.
Oh yeah, it should. As long as as long as it has DisplayPort pass through, I would assume.
Yeah,
yeah. So older Mac models that support target display mode go as new as 2014. So yes, your 2017 iMac cannot do it. But if you've got an older one, it's a potential option. Anyway, so yeah.
Dumb question.
No dumb questions here.
What are current prices on a 24-inch just 4K display?
A 24-inch?
How close to a 24-inch 4K display? How close could you get to around $100? Because I'm thinking if you're going to spend $100 on Luna display, are you just better off just getting a new 24-inch 4K display?
Let's look. 24-inch UHD monitor. Amazon says. Now that's 1080p. So we're just scrolling through Amazon here. ViewSonic has one for $550. That's a higher end color accurate thing. Sansui has one for $160, but it's only 1080p. It's looking like Amazon's overall pick for a 24-inch 4K is $240. There's one that's $200. There's another one that's Samsung's is 27-inch and 200. So for $200, you could get something there. And maybe that's better than, I don't know. There's not as much e-waste because you're using your old iMac. But the as fast and as optimized as Luna Display is, if you connect directly to an actual monitor as opposed to doing it via, you know, a hardware software secret handshake thing, you're going to get a better latency and lag with an actual physically connected display. So
yeah, I don't know. I just think through these things, like, you know, and then always people come up, you know, Wilf or Run in the Discord chats, like, well, what panel technology though are you getting for a cheap display?
Not great,
but I mean, again, it's a 20, what did we say, a 2014?
2017
iMac. I mean, Apple used great displays, but it's now 2025.
Yeah. It's 8 years old. Yep.
And I also look on MonoPrice. There was $249 for a 4K display refurb, but you know, they've got some good ones now. Yeah.
So. I can't believe they're still that expensive. Like, it seems like who's buying 24-inch 4K displays anymore anyway?
My guess is that they're going to get more expensive in the short term. If you want to buy, now would be the time, I would think. Yeah. So, yeah. All right. So let's be honest. We're always honest here, right? And we all drop serious cash on our shiny Apple gear, Macs, iPhones, iPads, all our peripherals. But how many of us are truly using these things and all the software we have to their full potential? That's where our sponsor Screencasts Online comes in. These folks have been creating pro-level Apple tutorials since before YouTube existed. Yep, 20 years this August. You don't last that long without doing something right. And boy, howdy, do those folks at Screencasts Online do things right. Every single week, you get two new videos, a full-length deep dive tutorial and a shorter tip-packed one, covering Apple's latest tricks and third-party apps you didn't even know you needed. It's like discovering a hidden level on your Mac without having to enter the Konami code. And now, Lee and the team over there are offering a 7-day free trial. No upfront charge. Plus, 20% off a monthly, quarterly, or annual subscription for as long as you stick around. Right. No tricks, just endless knowledge. Candidly, you've got nothing to lose, except maybe that confused look the next time someone asks you how to airdrop a PDF from the moon, right? Head to screencastsonline.com/MGG. Start with that free 7-day trial, and then because you're an MGG listener, you get that 20% off of a monthly, quarterly, or for the best value, annual subscription. And that discount, like I said, is applied with each renewal for as long as you remain a Screencasts Online member. Screencastsonline.com/MGG. And our sincere thanks to Lee and the team for sponsoring this episode. All right.
All right.
You ready to go, Pete?
Yeah, let's do some don't get caught. So I got caught three times this week, so to speak, but I picked these up. This first one is, it's almost certainly a bug, and I think it's going to get fixed. But Alan wrote in to the Discord help desk and says, I have an M2 MacBook Air and installed the Sequoia 15.4 update. When I try to send an email in Apple Mail, the send button turns gray and nothing else happens, including in the activity window. The Mail Connection Doctor window shows the IMAP and SMTP connections and log into the server succeeded for both my Fastmail and Gmail accounts. And I have checked that I can save a draft in Apple Mail and open the Fastmail app and send it from there. Does anyone have any suggestions on how to fix this? And Alan Farkas found the answer.
It's same Alan. He fixed his own issue.
There you go. I didn't even notice that. But yeah, I was looking down at the, because it's like three different in there.
Yeah.
But it's an Apple discussions thread, and this doesn't make sense why it works, but it does. And several people in the discussion thread said, yeah, it worked for me too. It's a spell check issue. Toggling spell check off and then back on solves the problem. So you go into settings, composing, this is in Mail, go to settings, composing, check spelling, and change it to never. Send a test email to make sure it sends, and then change the setting from never back to click when I send, and send a test email with the spelling error to confirm it checks and sends. So That's weird, but cycling the spell check off and then back on solves the grayed out send button in Apple Mail in 15.4.
I believe it. There's some weird issues with 15.4, aren't there, Adam?
Yeah.
You want to tell us about Dominic's report about 15.4?
Yeah. So Dominic says, "Greetings, geek. You gave a shout out to Make MKV on MGG 1083. With immaculate timing, Apple broke it on the same day with macOS 15.4. It turns out that this was identified during the beta cycle, but I don't run Make MKV on the Macs where I run betas. So I've just had an exciting time reverting my home media Mac to 14.3.2, which, is not easy. There are threads on the Make MKV forums about this, including a note that a fix will be available, quote, in a couple days. I got caught, so warn your listeners, if it's not too late, hopefully it's not too late, not to update to macOS until the new Make MKV versions appear." And we'll have a couple links there in the show notes, I think, for those threads.
Yeah, we're recording this on the morning of April 4th. Mike, the person who writes Make MKV, posted that the updated version for 15.4 will be available in a couple of days on Tuesday, April 1st. As of this morning, I did not see it out
not
there.
Not so much.
But, I mean, you know, so real soon now, I would expect to see that pop out. It's just not there right now. And I'm looking to see. No, it's not. It's not out yet. But
I wonder
hopefully
if they'll fix that spell check bug.
Hopefully.
Not a bug, it's a feature.
Well, no. This would be Make MKV is pushing.
No,
this.
I know. I'm just saying it's, you know, I wonder if they'll fix that too, as long as they're fixing other things.
Well, but I think that's the part that you might be misunderstanding that the fix for 15.4 is going to be an updated Make MKV app, not an update from Apple. So check error would have to come from Apple.
Right. Yes.
But I agree with you. Let's hope. Yeah. But yeah, we haven't seen a new Make MKV release yet. But we'll put a link to the download page as well, so that we, you know.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, Larry wrote in with another don't get caught, and he says, "So lately the display panel on my printer has been flashing at me incessantly that my toner cartridge is low and I should be replaced immediately. To be honest, I don't even remember changing the toner cartridges ever since I got this printer. It's a really nice Canon laser, but because I'm savvy and I know how to not get caught, I printed a test page and it seems I've got quite a bit of life left in this. I imagine," Pete's side note here, I wonder if it's a time thing in his case now, just occurred to me as I'm reading this.
Yeah.
So back to what he wrote, I printed the test page. It seems I've got quite a bit left in this, life left in this. I imagine the average Jane or John Doe wouldn't know to do this and would immediately run out to Staples and buy a toner cartridge. And he points out they're not giving those away. I guess it's cartridges cause there are four
cartridges, not cartridge, because
I guess
there
it's
four.
Cartridges cause there are because there are four, but still I love how low they price these things, the printers. It's what you put in them that gets pricey, just like the dealers giving out needles for free. Okay.
Wow.
Don't necessarily want to go there, but there we are. And I wrote him back. I said, "Look, that's really good advice. Verify your toner level before changing out that cartridge." And I have a screen indicator of toner level as well. And I don't know. I haven't checked to see if I have the ability to print out actual levels with a print page on my brother. I think I probably do. But my tactic is to print until I get a bad page. And then I know I'm out of, you know, when I can't get any more blue or black or what have you. Now I know I'm out of that toner and keep some on hand.
That was the important part, Pete. When you roll that way, is I always make sure I have a full set sitting on the shelf,
right,
so that I can run it all the way to where I'm not getting a good print. Because nothing's worse than hitting that point and then not having the cartridge and then not being able to find it.
Yeah. And so I will say, though, the prices on that even seem to be coming down. I used to go to, I don't know, some website. It was like cheaptonercartridges.com or something like that. I just made that up, but it was similar to that. And most recently, I've gotten on Amazon my toner cartridges for probably a third of the price of what I was paying for a set of four, to include a waste toner. I've had this printer so long, I had to replace the waste toner cartridge, which I'd never heard of.
Huh.
So there are videos how to empty that and make a complete mess of everything.
No. Not unless it's the last thing you're doing before you are abandoning your home, because that toner's going to get everywhere. Oh, yeah.
Yes, it is.
No, that's like if you leave, you know, fish, like dead fish in your car for 4 or 5 days. There are two steps to take after that. Number one is take it to the car wash and have them wash the inside and hang an air freshener. And number two is to take it to the dealer and sell it, because you will never actually get the fish smell out. So you will never get toner out of your home if you do that. So I looked at, he sent us a screenshot of his of that test page, and the reason it's giving him this warning is he's got four cartridges, cyan, magenta, yellow, and black. Three of them are at 40%, and his yellow is at 30%. And that's saying prepare a cartridge. It's saying it right on his test page. So the test page and the printer are agreeing with each other that a replacement is coming. It's just that the test page gives you, as he said correctly, more information about just how close you are. So he's not at 10%. He's at 30, and that's the advice here. Is just check that, check your levels. And like you said, Pete, with some printers you get an app to do that, and some you don't. But
but it's too expensive to throw away 30%.
Absolutely, 100% correct on that. Yes,
I think this still happens. So I don't know. I do this. This may just be my own mental thing. Another thing on saving toner cartridges in my mind with a laser printer, especially, well, actually also with an inkjet, just saving ink. If you are printing out something that is black and white, make sure you change your printer settings to black only.
Yes.
Because otherwise it will do what's called a four color black, and it mixes to darken and richen the black colors into your blacks. So you're wasting color toner or ink if you don't make that switch. I think that's mostly the case for most applications.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love it. I'm putting
the new inkjets are pretty cool. My mother-in-law just got one of those ones. You get the little bottles and you can refill them, and they're apparently a lot cheaper.
Yeah, comment. You're right about that. Inkjets are usually fairly easy to contain the mess. Larry's printer was a laser, so that's a little different. But as far as buying off-brand, third-party toner, I have found that I get what I pay for with that. In terms of longevity of the cartridge, I've bought regular life cartridges from the manufacturer and extended life cartridges from, you know, whatever the off-brand company Amazon recommends. And the regular life first-party cartridges, toner cartridges, last way longer. They also have far less of a chance of streaking and leaking, which I have also seen with aftermarket toner. Does that mean that I only buy first-party toner? No, of course, I'm cheap. I buy the other stuff, but I know what I'm getting myself into. And I've learned which brands to stay away from, kind of. You get a sense for like, okay, that's if it seems too good to be true, it is.
Yeah.
Cheap and worth it. So, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So
I 100% agree with that. I got burned by third party things in exactly the same way. I think one time it even was so bad that I had to just basically replace the drum part of it or whatever. It got so corrupted with garbage toner. Every print was coming out terrible. So I just have opted to pay the extra and always get the first party brother cartridges, but you pay more.
You do pay more. Yeah. I think I've got a Lexmark printer now that's been doing pretty well with aftermarket toner. My HP prior to that was the one where I was like, fine, I'm just going to buy the first party stuff. Or at the very least, you know, the higher end third party stuff. It's the remanufactured toner cartridges that wind up being a nightmare. So, yep. On the whole, kind of related to the whole 15.4 thing, simply because it showed up for all of us this week. Adam, you had a question as we were getting together.
Yeah. Yeah. And anybody who's on 15.4, I think, knows that Apple has brought another one of these wonderful alert dialog boxes that's constantly in our face now. And it's like every app you open up, it's like asking about using your network connection. And so specifically this one was my browser. You know, I use Edge and we're using StreamYard to record the show. And so popped up Edge on 15.4 and it says, hey, Edge wants to use your network connection. It needs to be able to do this to communicate with other things on your network, of whatever the dialogue says.
Local devices, I think. Yeah.
Local devices. And I had to give pause because I thought, well, normally my default posture on these is no, because I don't know what it's wanting to do. And so my question is, what is it wanting to do? Did I need to do? I said yes, because I didn't know if StreamYard maybe needed it for some reason. I'm presuming it probably doesn't. But so why would my browser need that?
I think the timing of this has changed. When 15.0 first came out, you know, we all started seeing these new dialogues and we started getting alert blindness. We even did a segment ranting about that. Fish shake city. Fine. Great. I still agree with that fish shake. I think we've got too many alerts and we're all going to get alert blindness. But this one specifically about local devices. Like you, I now see it the moment I launch an app. However, where I previously saw it, and I think is the informative tidbit here, is I saw it when I would go to a print dialogue. And that's when it would come up and say, do you want to give this app, whatever the app was, access to devices on your local network? And it was so that it could print to it. Now, I don't understand why that dialogue would come up for an app that is using Apple's Print Center, because I'm not giving the app access to local devices. It's using an API to print and then going to whatever printer I've configured through macOS. So it seemed a little extra. And I guess Apple decided to make it extra and show it to us the first time we launch the app, whether we are ever going to print with the app or not, just because the app can print. That's my presumption, because it's happening with all kind of the same apps and browsers. I mean, obviously you can print from a browser, but that's my guess is it's asking there, because previously it would not ask until, and it's all the same apps, it would not ask until I went to the print dialogue, and that's when it would ask. So that's my presumption on that, Adam.
Do you think it's related at all also to things like, you know, I'm pretty sure in my browser, especially if it's a Chrome browser,
yep,
that YouTube can, like, if I had a Chromecast or something like that, I could Chromecast that video from my browser to my something else on my network, a TV
totally.
Or other location. Same thing probably with audio. That's why it gave me pause with StreamYard, but I had to think that through and go, well, StreamYard's not actually going out to anything on my network, but I guess presumably it might be able to if I allowed it.
Well, it's not so much StreamYard, it's Edge, right? And so right. A browser could go, there's many reasons, printing being one of them, accessing your router, for example. If you want to load up your router's web page for the management web page, that's a device on your local network. So it has to, you would have to give it. But I guess where my issue comes in with what we're seeing with 15.4 is that it's just asking it for us the moment we launch the app, so there's no context to say, oh, it makes sense. Yeah. I mean, like, I think it doesn't make sense about printing, but at least I understood what was happening. It's like, I went to print, it asked for stuff on my network. I have a network printer. This makes sense. Or if I went to go to access my router's webpage, that makes sense. Here with it, just like before I ever get to do anything, it's saying, can you do this? It's like, I don't, I guess. I think this is going to lead to more alert blindness.
Yeah. The context. I think that that's the key. There should be context in that dialogue. Hey, this is needed for A, B, C, and D.
Yeah.
You know, even if it's just a bullet list of like, we need it for streaming to, you know, video devices on your network. We need it for, you know, audio streaming, and we need it for printing. Like, if it just said that, then you could be like, okay.
Okay, great. Then you make an informed decision as opposed to a blind decision. Yeah. Related to this, when we talked about it the first time, the one that was coming up for all of us was the monthly permissions for allowing screen capture for things like Zoom or other, you know, remote control software. There's an app that was written by our friends at Gumroad that is called Amnesia. Jordy Bruin wrote this, and it will set the timer to many, 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 many years past when we would have stopped using these computers. So you can effectively set it forever, but that's only for the screen capture access. I haven't yet seen one for the local network access, but I will make a prediction that it is coming, because the last time I made this prediction, Amnesia came out. So I want Amnesia to expand to more than just screen capture. So that would be my preference, because I don't want these things.
Cool.
Yeah, I often will, when I get the notification that I have to go into the, you know, system settings privacy and turn on like accessibility access for a specific app to use, you know, the app complains, I don't have this, please go in and do this. When I'm in there, I turn it on for every app in the list. I'm reading which apps they are. Obviously, if it's some app I don't recognize, I might pause. But my default is to just turn it on for everything. I've installed the app. I'm running the app. Why would I not want it? I don't want to get caught in a moment where I need it, and then it's popping up, and now I got to reboot the app to get it to. It's such a pain. I don't know. That's just me. Maybe I'm too trusting.
Why don't computers just know what we want? Asking for a friend.
We're getting there, Pete. We're getting there. Yeah. Intent. That's the thing. That's, and that can work in both directions. Like, if the computer can see what we're intending, if it can understand what we're trying to do, what the end goal is, it can help us a lot more.
Right.
And that's, you know, to go a little bit off the beaten path or off the intended path here. I have found when I'm interacting with, you know, one of the LLMs like ChatGPT, if I ask it, how do I do X, it comes up with some answers, and a lot of times they're not entirely right. And that's fine, because I can test it and learn which parts are right and go back and interact more. Where I find I can make that interaction a whole lot more efficient is by telling it why I'm trying to do something first. And I generally don't type the whole paragraph out. I speak it. I just, you know, dictate it or whatever. I say, here, this is what I'm trying to do. This is what I'm the goal. Now I think I need to know how to do X, but if you've got a better idea, tell me. And often that gets me down the path faster. It's giving it and in a meta sense, that's the idea of giving the LLM, the more you give it specifically about whatever you're doing, the more accurate and valuable the results are going to be. Asking it short questions doesn't work as well.
Yeah. Well, it goes back to computers do what you tell them, right? Exactly what you tell them and nothing more. And then large language models, I think, work the same.
Kind of the same. Yeah.
You know, although it is impressive to watch some of them learn, like the one at those bots at the Sphere, those androids at the Sphere.
Oh, yeah, that was pretty good.
They can learn. So that was cool.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Be careful, Pete, because we're probably not that far from brain-computer interfaces. So
we're not going to be happy about it. When it happens, it could be, you know.
I don't know if I want my computer knowing what I'm thinking, because it will probably show me stuff that I really don't want it showing me.
That you can't unsee.
if you want to do something interesting, if you have been using ChatGPT for a while, and if you have it set to the default where it remembers things from session to session and learns context about you, go in and ask ChatGPT. This is worth a short request. What do you know about me? And you can even say, and what advice do you have for me?
Oh, God.
It's interesting. It's fascinating. I mean, it also creepy, but you know.
Oh, let's get out of creepy.
Go.
All right.
Yeah. So Kent wrote in, he goes, from time to time, I use my iPhone, currently an iPhone 15, to scan documents when my desktop scanner is not convenient. It works great with one exception. If the original is US letter size 8.5 by 11, as most of them are, the resulting scan fills the screen of my 27-inch iMac when I later open it. Adobe Photoshop Elements tells me the new image is around 29 by 35 inches at 300 dpi. Of course, I can resize the image to its true size, but that extra step seems like it should be unnecessary. I can't find any settings on the iPhone to change the output size, and my searching for an answer has not turned up any solutions. Short of writing an automator script or a shortcut to resize the output, do you have a solution? Thanks, Kent.
Yeah, interesting. I think so, but I've found the same as Kent. Yeah. The PDF is larger than I want it to be when I scan with the Files app, and like it's just how it be. But resizing is the best solution, I guess. I guess you could use Hazel on a Mac.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
To like look for photos or PDFs, like whatever, you know, whatever you're doing. I mean, he said an automator script or a shortcut. Yes. But Hazel to trigger that would be, I don't know. That would be my answer.
Yep.
I don't. It is, you know, like many things that Apple does, they prioritize both convenience and simplicity. And by not giving us all of those options to tweak it, people don't wind up in situations where they don't expect to be, right? I have a fish shake about this. And it's also a request for those of you. Apple does let you change the image size in one place, and that is in Mail when you are sending an email that you have attached images to. It will offer to send them at actual size, low, medium, or high. And this exists on iPhone and on Mac. It's great on iPhone because it asks you each time. A dialogue comes up and asks you. On the Mac, whatever you used for the previous email with which you sent images sticks. And sometimes from you folks, we will get screenshots from you that you're sending along to be helpful to try and illustrate an issue that you're having. And we can't read them because they were sent at low quality. And I know you didn't choose to send them, that one to us at low quality, but you probably chose low quality for something 2 weeks prior on your Mac, and it just stays there. So that that I think is a way to illustrate why this thing where you're scanning doesn't have options. Because can you imagine if you scan something that you only had one shot at scanning and now you're no longer there where it is. And now it's, you know, unintelligible because you had some previous setting that you didn't notice and forgot about. So yeah, that's.
So I just tried something while you were talking, Dave. I used Genius Scan on my phone.
Oh, sure.
And scanned a document, and it, when I opened it in PDF Expert, it was there. It was about 8.5 by 11. I think the problem is when I hit Command I on the file itself, I'm not getting the actual dimensions. So I should try and open it in something else, maybe preview and see what it comes with. But it doesn't seem to be. Yeah, even in preview, it seems like a fairly normal size. So maybe
I just Googled on this, and guess what?
What's that?
If you go in the Files app and you tap and hold on the file in question, you can go down to Quick Actions, open up Quick Actions, and there is a command called Optimize File Size.
Huh.
But I just tried it. It didn't do any. Like, I had a scanned document that was 2.6 megabytes.
Sure.
It compressed it to 2.6 megabytes.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Yeah. So it's not the
your
greatest.
Your mileage may vary, but there is an Optimize that's supposed to work with PDFs. I don't know if it's only specific PDFs. Well, you can
and
play
I,
with that.
I think Kent, I mean, I know we've been talking about PDFs and images. I think Kent's question was about images.
Images,
specifically.
Yeah. Images are huge.
Yeah, but I mean, either way, we're talking about images. It's either
sure.
Is it saving as an image or is it saving embedded inside a PDF? Because either way, it's taking a picture.
A PDF
of it.
Is an image of a document. Yeah,
that PDF is an image of a document.
Yeah.
Not all PDFs are images of documents. But
fair enough.
But yeah, but that one would be until it was OCR'd or whatever. But yeah, yeah, yeah. I find the same thing. I wind up doing scans. Most recently for my accountant to send some things along for our annual taxes. And I use in PDF Expert, I use that app's save as reduced file size or whatever. I used to use a quartz filter that I built myself that you could set different things with. I seem to recall, or I took somebody else's and tweaked it. Maybe I don't think I built it from scratch, but yeah.
Yeah. I would think the shortcut is the way to go and then use a quick action on a shortcut.
Yeah. And that way you can compression. Control. Yeah. And then do the compression inside the PDF. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, all right. Should we go to Kelly has a question?
Please.
Pogo Kelly has a question about battery optimization for AirPods. Says, love my new AirPods Pro Gen 2 ANC. Hearing aid, freedom from wires, all great. What's the best practice for optimizing battery life? Usual usage, I use them for an hour or so before taking them out. Generally, I put them back in the case, even though the battery still has plenty of juice. And I'm now wondering if I should draw down the battery on an occasion or regular basis.
Pete?
So, yeah. So this was in the Discord help desk, and I don't have the note up in front of me. I'm sorry. I was looking at something, trying to get to the next one I was going to read. But the long and short of it was just use your AirPods. Just use them. I use and abuse my AirPod batteries. And so I guess in that sense, yeah, I do take them down all the way sometimes. And I get the little doot-doot-doot-doot, and it's dead. I'm like, okay. But in 3 years or so of this particular set of AirPods Pro 2, they don't owe me anything. And the batteries last hours. And once it does die, I can put it in, and 5 minutes later, it's back up. But I don't think you're hurting the battery if you use it for an hour and throw it back in the case. These seem to be, and someone in there, I recall, put, it seems to be doing the smart battery management that, Apple is putting that in there. I can neither confirm nor deny that, but I found using and abusing your AirPods does not seem to degrade them.
Adam?
Same. No, I just use them as is. The only thing... I mean, I sometimes will just use one AirPod depending upon what I'm doing and then kind of swap them back and forth. But yeah, I've never worried too much about the batteries on my AirPods Pro, but I've also not kept them very long for then replacing them. Like, I think the longest I've ever had a set was probably 2 or 3 years.
Yeah. I mean, you were the one that I thought crystallized it great you know, years ago, probably a decade ago, Adam, which was keep the electrons flowing, right? So yeah. the as long as you're using and charging and, you know, that's the best thing for these current batteries. The worst thing would be to just leave it on charge all the time, but that's impossible if you're using your AirPods. So it's a self-solving problem. I think you'd have to go out of your way to significantly accelerate any degradation of that battery. It will degrade.
Yeah. The opposite is also true. And this is true for any lithium ion battery. There's other battery technologies I think that are coming into play now, but certainly for these, another thing that is terrible is to just leave them discharged and just sitting around. So like if you're going to put something into storage or something like that, you generally want to, it's my understanding, put about a 75% charge in it and then leave it for a time. So if you know you're not going to be using something for a while, but you know, like I have a lot of old Apple gear. Like I have my Series 2 Apple Watch that I gave my daughter and then she didn't use it. And I found it in her drawer. And I mean, the battery on this thing's gone now at this point, because I think it sat around with no charge on it for years.
I had my OG Apple Watch that I wound up letting sit in a drawer for a really long time. And I just kept trying. And it probably took 6 weeks until the watch battery finally came around. I would put it on the charger and take it off and put it on. And there were a few times where it came online and I was like, amazing, eureka, only to get a Wi-Fi signal and start, you know, doing all of the syncing that, of course, it hadn't had a chance to do in months or whatever. And that would drain the battery faster than the battery could continue charging and it would kill it. So it was this whole thing, but it took a few months and now I can use that watch. It's amazing. So, yeah. It might not be as dead as you think. Not dead yet.
Well, not so much dead, but like it does not have the battery life that it did.
Oh yeah, like, no.
It's degraded the battery and that's kind of what we're... Point is that goes back to the earlier statement. If you keep the electrons flowing, that's what these batteries like. They don't want to be 100% all the time. They don't want to be zero all the time. They want to bounce somewhere in between. And that's exactly what Apple's battery optimization does, right?
Yes.
Make sure you're not overcharging it all the time and you're not undercharging it, you know? So
yeah,
that's the key, is that bouncing in the middle and cycling it. And that seems to be the best practice.
Yep.
Yeah. Because they are lithium batteries, I would be willing to bet Apple is putting some smart technology in there in order to prevent overcharging.
Oh, you don't have to bet. They talk about it. It's there. Yeah. Okay. Oh, for sure. 100%. Oh, yeah.
I'm just thinking in the AirPods Pro. I'm not talking about, you know, obviously in the computers, the phones, that kind of stuff.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
The technology is available to them, so why not put it in the
I would agree with you. Yeah, for sure. All right, a couple of cool things found before we have to say goodbye here. I got an interesting thing, and there's a trend that I'm seeing, which I really like. The interesting thing is this INIU 10,000 milliamp hour magnetic MagSafe Qi2, really, power bank. And it's really thin for a 10,000. It's like the size of most of the 5,000s that I've used. It has a little kickstand on it so that you can like use it as a stand for your phone if you want. And it also has a little strap that hangs off of it, which I thought, okay, well, this is a little weird. And I was in my kitchen when it arrived and kind of handed it around. My family's like, oh, that's pretty cool. And Lisa, again, to kind of come full circle on the episode here, it's like, wait a minute. She pulls it out and realizes that the strap is a USB-C to USB-C cable. So what's cool about this thing is it's got 15-watt, true 15-watt charging on the Chi2, which is, you know, MagSafe. And then also 45 watt fast charging with the lanyard USB-C cable. So not only is that enough to charge your phone, I plugged it into my MacBook Air and it was giving it juice. Now, I mean, my MacBook Air will drain 10,000 milliamp hours much faster than my phone would, but still having that all right there, it's actually a pretty cool little thing and MagSafe. So yeah, fun. And it's $36 right now on Amazon. Normal price is $43. Yeah. So not a bad deal.
Nice.
Yupper.
All right.
You got one, Pete?
I do. And so I saw these at CES, and I'm going to quickly throw, or maybe not. I just, the window went away. I'll put it in after I'm done talking about it. I found some Lutron Cassetta shades at CES. These are window shades, and we moved in June and didn't have window treatments on our picture window. And so I asked if I could try these out, and I did, and boy, they're easy to measure.
Okay.
They say, hey, here, you want to install it within the window, over the top of the window, that sort of thing. So I want to do it within the window. It says, these are your rules to follow. Measure twice, you know, cut once. And so I did that, and I sent it in. The order came. I installed it with a screwdriver. I did use a drill to do a pilot hole for the screws, but they come with actually self-tapping screws. So a screwdriver, a tape measure, and they were super easy to quickly install.
I think you're burying a lead here. These are smart shades, right?
Smart shades, yes.
Okay, so you control them with your phone?
Yes.
Okay.
Control and or your voice. This is the cool thing, because now I can say, hey, A-Lady.
Sure.
Lower the shades 20%. Lower them 75%.
And you could have it automate that too.
Yes.
Time of day.
And yeah. And so and the S lady will also do it. Sure. And, So A lady will do it. S lady will do it. And it comes with a little, well, it doesn't come with you. You do have to purchase the little remote and the bridge that specifically works with Lutron, but it all integrates into the home app. Hence A lady and S lady will work the magic, but you hit the little button. It's got five buttons. The top button pulls them all the way up. The bottom button pulls them all the way down. The middle button puts them exactly halfway, and the two buttons either side of the middle move the shades in unison as long as you are holding the button down. And as soon as you release the button, it's got, and you can get these in blackout. You can get them. I got them in light filtering, not light blocking.
Prices start at like $400.
$399.
Yeah. Okay.
For a shade. And, for my shades, they were, I've got about a 5 foot picture window with two and a half foot windows on either side of that. So all three of those move in unison. Those, the whole thing, remote control, all that stuff came to $1,600 retail.
Okay. I have a question for you, because you shared a video with me of how these work. How do you get power to them? It looked like I didn't see any wires or cords.
There are none. This is cool. So when you install them, and the videos are actually pretty good. I didn't have them, and I was trying to figure it out, and I finally went to the video, you know, when all else fails, read the instructions. But they slide in and out, which turns out to be a good thing, because you need them to slide out a little bit so you can put 5 D cell batteries in the big one, 4 D cells in each of the small, and you know, those D cells are going to run those motors for years. I'm certain of it. But
that's okay, because I was looking. Yeah. I'm like, all right, where are all these ugly wires that are going to be there? Huh? Very cool, man.
Yeah, and they're just not there. So, cool. I'm trying to. Why is it? I don't want a free trial. Oh, see, that's why I can't upload it to Discord. It's a 20 megabyte video.
Oh, yeah. Well, put the video on YouTube.
Throw it in Discord in a little bit.
Put the video on YouTube for people, and we can show them. But yeah, no, that's pretty cool, man. Very cool.
They're so nice. And then, you know, I'm going to talk bad about Debbie now, because it's what we do here. So last night I had the A-Lady all set up, and I'm going, look, honey, hey, A-Lady. Lower the shades 20%. And she's like, I don't want to have to use, can I use the remote button? I don't want to use my phone. I go, you don't need to use your phone. A lady's sitting over there in an Echo.
That's cool.
I just want to use the button remote. Okay, that's fine. So resistant to change.
Yeah, well, it's nice to have all the options. Like, whatever works for you. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, but as Matthew Dropka says, like the shades in Blade Runner at the Tyrell Corporation. They are indeed.
Do we have time for one more, Adam?
Barely, but I have a question on Pete's thing.
All right, then we'll save the one
for
more.
My wife. Can they be operated manually?
Just
pull the shade down?
No, not really.
That would be the killer.
But boy, is that slow and difficult. Oh, these are behind a couch anyway. So trying to get up there, you'd have to stand on the couch and pull on them. These are nice because when you can just push the buttons over on the side, push them to where you want them. But
not intended to be manually operated.
No, not intended to be manual.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
All right. Well, then we will save the remaining cool stuff found for next week. If it turns out we have to come back next week, guys.
Again?
We get to come back next week. It's really kind of how I think about it.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
It is a privilege and a fun one at that.
I agree. So. Thanks for hanging out with us. Remember to check out our monthly giveaway. You can win a copy of Clean My Mac, a license to Clean My Mac, I should say. So thanks to MacPaw for doing that with us. That's available through all of April, and there's already a ton of people who have signed up for it. But that doesn't mean you aren't going to win. In fact, I'm certain that you are going to win. So go check it out, MacGeekab.com/giveaway. Thanks to CashFly for providing all the bandwidth to get the show from us to you. Go check out our other podcasts. Adam does the debut film podcast. Pete does So There I Was, and I do Business Brain and Gig Gab. And, you know, there's new merch available, so go check it out. MacGeekab.com/merch. Thank you so much for hanging out with us, everybody. We love what we get to do here. So, and it's you let us do it. We would have these conversations even if we weren't recording them, but this is so much more fun, so much more rewarding, candidly. We all get to learn together. We wouldn't learn as much if you weren't involved, folks.
Oh, I'm asking, you know, would you help me edit my Etsy host file if we didn't have the show? I'm asking for a friend.
I probably would, but I wouldn't have anywhere to give you crap about it, Pete. So
that's true.
Yeah. Hey, folks, have a great week and don't get caught.
Made up.